listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
With the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this interview with writer, director, and actor, Mr. Patrick Lazar. How are you?
Hey, how's it going?
And you got to be Italian with that last name, of course.
You know it.
Now, you and I have been talking a lot of football, even before we started. Did you grow up in Buffalo? Are you from?
No, I was born in Buffalo, New York. Grew up in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Okay, so when did you move?
To Vegas.
Yeah.
I was 3 years old.
So I love the roots are strong with Buffalo.
We don't change. Dude, I was a Buffalo Bills fan when we were terrible and now when we're good.
And you know what? I gotta give you mad respect.
Yeah.
Because you went through a lot of Super Bowl losses with Jim Kelly.
That was
a great team. That team should have won one.
You win one, you're a dynasty.
Yes, yes.
One.
Yeah. Andre Rison. I mean, you had the best.
Andre Reed.
Yeah, Andre Reed. That's right. Andre Rison was on.
Kevin Thomas, Jim Kelly, Bruce Smith. That team is mad. Hall of Fame.
They should have won one. It was just like things worked against them. I know. But you know what? The fact that you stuck it through and now you're going to win one. I'm pretty sure you're going to win it next year.
Let's hope so.
This year. You and I had a lot of debates. Yeah. But I, KC's not my team, but man, I saw
Patrick Mahomes.
They balled out. And you know what? It's like I remember seeing them. I think it was like on a Monday night game on week three. I was like, man, I think they're going to win. I think they're going to take it. And like
the Chargers.
Yeah, yeah.
They always do. We went to a game. They were losing with a minute to go, and they came back and won.
But you have a quarterback. You have a Super Bowl winning quarterback. Yeah. Like that's like got to be, and he's young, and you're going to have lots of years. I'm sure he'll win one or two. Yeah. I know he'll win one. I'm thinking they'll win next year because
I'll take that. If I get one out of the, so they said Von Miller's contract's like 6 years. If he gives me one championship, it's where
he will. I mean, dude, he gave the Rams one. So, I mean, he's just good juju.
And he was on the Denver when they won.
So we had to talk a little football. And you told me your wife's a big Chiefs fan.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that was a little bit
tough. It's rough every year. I got to sit next to her when the Bills play the Chiefs.
Well, tell her I said congrats. And I think your Bills will be in it next year. And I think the only hump, I think, are going to be the Bengals.
That whole AFC stack. There's so many young stack quarterbacks down there.
Yep. So next year, regroup, man. Regroup. Get the guys energized. Yeah. Let them rest a little bit. But we're here to talk about your short film.
Yes.
Awesome, awesome movie. I saw it in the theaters for the premiere of it.
Oh, yeah.
It was so, so fun at Grauman's, the TCL Chinese Theaters. Tell me a little bit about how you first became in love with the directing and writing and acting part of
film. Well, I've always been an actor. So when I grew up, I grew up in Las Vegas, and what I would do, there's not a lot of avenues to act out there.
Right.
But I did join an acting studio, and we got to perform one acts on stage, and it was front. And in Vegas, you're putting it up in front of 100 people. In LA, you're going to get three or four people in the audience, because it's a film and TV town.
Did you do it like in a hotel or in
they're like little, not convention centers, but like maybe at a library.
Okay.
And then you got a stage but there's all these little places in Vegas that you can do that. And my acting coach, Joseph Bernard, he was in the business. He went to the Actor's Studio in New York. He trained with James Dean.
Wow.
Paul Newman, Marlon Brando.
He's old school.
This guy. And what he would do is he would tell these stories, and I ate them up. But a lot of young actors are like, get this old guy out of here. I want to act. I want to get up. And I was like soaking in all these stories he would tell. He would tell about an hour of story before the class started. And I would be like, wow, he's talking about Brando and how he worked on Streetcar Named Desire and how he went to the zoo and followed a tiger around because he wanted to be animalistic in his performance. And I was like soaking all that in. And a lot of actors like, boring, I want to act. I loved it.
Dude, you know what? I always feel like that is the test of a true artist. If if you see the whole scope of it and you enjoy all of it, including the people that were working in those kind of parameters or with those people before that. And it's just inspiring.
Yeah. Like that's the beat off that. Yes. You hear about Brando, who's one of the greatest actors ever. Absolutely. And his process of how he got to a character. And it's like, wow, that's something I want to do. You know, you want to be so involved in the character and the realism and just hearing about these old greats and how they trained and how they worked, you know, it's like, and when you're in school, you know, that's where you become a good actor.
Right.
You make mistakes, you do these things, and then you become, you know, hopefully good.
What was the best, like, sage wisdom he gave you when you were taking classes?
I just liked how he thought of me. He really saw the passion in me, and he always was like, you're going to make it because of your passion for it.
That's
what I mean? And that just always felt, I had tons of passion. I still have it. You know, I love watching old movies. I love hearing the old stories. I love, you know what I do is I still buy Blu-rays. I know.
Me too.
Yeah. I know, like, so, you know, material, you know, like DVDs and Blu-rays, those are out of fashion. Everybody streams everything, but all the extras are on there.
Yeah.
And you hear the director, you hear the writer, how they came up with the story. I have the Criterions, you know, I get those because there's so much information about the making of the film and how they came up with the scripts or directed a scene, or even in Die Hard, you know, I love Die Hard. It's one of my favorites. They came up with the action scenes day of.
That's crazy.
Improv of what they're going to do for the day.
Well, tell me you've seen the Nakatomi Building in L.A.
Yeah, of course. Okay, so you know what I want
to
do?
I used to live right by there.
Well, so a lot of people say I look like Bruce Willis. I want to get in a white tank top and go down.
Hell yeah, man. That would be awesome, dude. Get a picture tank. You have to do that, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, I love that building. That's the only thing I think about every time I'm by.
Yeah, that's the 20th Century Fox building.
Yep.
Yeah.
What was the movie that you remember seeing, maybe it was as a kid, that made you fall in love with movies? What was that moment of zen for you?
So when I was young, you know, movie going was what you did.
Yes.
This is what I did was I bought, Leonard Maltin had this movie book. It was about that thick and it had every notable movie in it on VHS.
Right.
At the time it was VHS. And what I would do is go through that and I would go through every like 4-star movie. Oh, is this good? Let me rent that. And I went to the video store and then I would go in the back of the book. They had all notable actors, Paul Newman, Robert Redford, James Cagney. And what I would do is get every one of their movies and rent all of them.
Wow. Because
I wanted to be an actor.
Right.
I wanted to be an actor.
How old were you? How did you know like this is what
I was a teenager. So, you know, whatever, 15 maybe.
Wow.
This is when this started. And then I became the highest renter at the video store. So what would happen on weekends, sometimes my boys would go out and party and I would be like, you know what? I'm going to stay in this weekend and just watch. I would rent 4 movies at a time, watch them all, bring them back, buy 4, you know, get 4, watch those. And I remember it was such a, you know, delight to go to a video store and look at the box and be like, oh, wow, okay, I'm going to watch this tonight, you know?
You had to be a little heartbroken when you, like, you look for the movie behind, you know, like, sometimes it's behind, and you'd be like, shit, it's rented. It's
it's out, and there's only 2 copies.
They'll never know, like, that, like, disdain that you have because they have everything at their, you know, it's like, dude, that was a big deal. It's like,
yeah, you never, you would be like, oh, there's only two copies. It's supposed to come back in on Wednesday. I got to get there before they return the movie. Dude,
that was, you know, the price of it. And speaking of Die Hard, what's so funny, I think I was 9 years old or something like that when that movie came out. And my older brother was like, dude, we got to go see Die Hard. And I'm like, I can't get in, you know? And I was like, how are you going to get in? Like, so, you know, I think it was rated R. So we had to have our babysitter, our Mexican babysitter who barely spoke any English. We're like, please, can you just go buy the tickets? And so he had a friend and they all three went. And I was just like, kind of like roaming around. And she bought the tickets, and we made it, and we were like going down the little walkway. We were so excited, and then you had some manager was like, "Excuse me, wait a minute, you're too young." We were so close, dude, and so it was like in the mall. It was like
this
in the
here
mall.
In L.A.
Yeah, this is in L.A. And I was like, so you know what? When I saw that movie finally, it was that feeling of like, oh my God, this movie is even greater. Special. Yeah, it's something special. Yeah. So like that feeling that you have at the rental store when you don't find those movies and you have to wait. Yeah. I mean, that it's so gratifying when you
finally get the movie.
So like people don't understand. I feel like because that's been taken away from them, they don't appreciate the, like how good
the accessibility of it.
Yeah. So I love that you did that. You did that like all weekend. You just rent like
I rented. So when I would go to the store, the girl was like, "Oh my God, you're our highest renter. You have over 4,000 rentals."
Wow,
I was consuming movies. It was my film school. It was my education. You know, and then what happened was I was just an actor. That's what I wanted to be. I took some acting classes in high school, and I was even writing one act plays. I didn't know what I was doing, but I started writing my own plays. And when you're an actor, you got to create material for yourself, because what the deal is you can sit on the sidelines and go, please give me a job. Oh, I got an audition next Tuesday. I'm one of 100 people. Oh, I hope I get it. Or create work for yourself. That's what I do. I study.
This is where you and I are the same. You and I are the same. It's about creating content, and you are in the driver's seat. You're funding stuff. Yeah. You're writing stuff. You're making stuff.
It's stuff I want to be in. You know, a lot of times when I first came out to LA, I would go out for roles that I wasn't right for or that, you know, isn't my type. And you're just off when you audition. And then it was like, okay, these are the roles. Let me show the people what kind of roles I want to play and be in. I mean, I always liked thrillers and crime films and this and that. So it's like, what I did first was I just had a scenes out of a script I wrote, and I shot that as my acting reel. Then I started getting auditions for same type. Oh, I can play this criminal. I can do this role or whatever it is. Cop. I'm always, you know, I get cop, criminal, this, that, you know, so it's like.
Both sides of the gut, man. Both sides of the gut.
Yeah. But those are fun. Those are great.
You were saying something earlier that you were studying Steve Martin. Is that what you said? You said, who did you say? You said you would study.
Not Steve Martin. I love Steve Martin. But I love all the movies. That's the thing about it. It wasn't just sticking to one genre when I did study film. It was everything.
Right.
And that's the thing is, like, I think that's kind of gone away. It's like, you know, it's like, I mean, there's still other movies, but I mean, like, I find myself watching more thrillers and this and that. Before, it was just a wide variety, but everything was good.
Right.
The comedies, the dramas.
Well, it's like the 80s was like, you know, we kind of undervalue what the 80s were, but to me, it was such a renaissance of film and like pop culture because, man, you have movies like The Goonies and you have movies
You would watch today and be like, oh, my God. I mean, look at Stranger Things. They're influenced by The Goonies. Yep. When I first saw Stranger Things, I was like, oh, this is The Goonies.
You know, what's crazy is I heard their pitch was they just took clips of X-Files. Yeah.
Well, check it out. I studied their master class.
Wow. 'Cause,
you know, here's the thing now is like, it's weird. Movies are kind of like not the thing. Anybody talks about now are TV shows,
right?
Limited series, this and that. So I was like, all right, I studied for 30 years how to write movies. Now it's all about nobody's talking about movies.
Right. Right.
Even the biggest, best movies. Nobody's like, oh, how about that movie? It's, hey, did you watch Stranger Things? Did you watch what's the new show now? Whatever's on now, you know, White Lotus or whatever. That's what people are talking about all the time. So I was like, all right, I got to learn how to write limited series. And what they are is just one long movie.
But I mean, do you think that's taken away from the movie cinema experience? Like,
oh, for sure.
Because I still go to movie theaters all the time.
I love that. You don't know, that was my church.
Yeah.
I would go whatever, and I'm telling you, I saw everything. If it was bad, if it was whatever. But in the 80s and 90s, it was about the star
right.
of the movie, which I think is gone now.
Yeah.
I mean, Tom Cruise is a movie star. You go see the movie maybe because of Brad Pitt, but you're not going to see these movies because of.
There has to be more. That's the one thing I do like, that some things are elevated. Like there were so many bad movies that are so
good
to see, you know, in the 80s, but now those wouldn't make the cut. And
but think about it. It was star driven to where now it's concept driven, I would say.
Right.
And a lot of people just go, why go to the movie when I can sit at home and watch something?
Right.
I'm not going to pay, because in LA, it's $40.
Well, have you been to, I know your film Restless was at TCL Chinese.
Yeah. Theater.
Have you seen a movie in the big theater?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Man, that is the movie
experience. Well, you know what my wife likes now is Alamo Drafthouse.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So
we go there. You know, that's awesome. Where we go see movies. And it's great.
So let me ask you this. When was that moment where you were like, I need to take things into my own hands and make content?
Yeah. So I was an actor. And then I remember I was in college. So me and my friend were in the actor studio, and we were both talking about moving out to LA. But, you know, here's the thing. A lot of people tell you, oh, LA, you can't afford LA.
Right.
You can't live there. You can't afford LA. Don't go there. Don't go there. And I had a really comfortable life in Las Vegas. I know my friends, my girlfriend, this, that. So it was like a long time I put it off because I was, yeah, you can't afford LA. It's too hard.
Right.
So, but I was at UNLV taking film and theater courses. And then I just went to my friend and I was like, hey, let's, and this is back in the day when you're shooting on VHS.
Right. Wow.
I was like, let's make a short film.
Cameras.
Yeah. I was like, let's make a short film, you know? And I wrote a crime thriller thing. I still have it. I still have the VHS tape in my bookshelf back there.
But just send me that clip, man.
Yeah. I want to get it digitized because you could take the VHS and have them digitized. But anyway, so it was like, we shot this crime film, and you know, you think you're making Reservoir Dogs on a $17 budget, you know, but it turned out pretty good. It played some festivals.
Wait, and you shot it in LA?
No, in Vegas.
Okay, so where did you shoot it in Vegas?
Just all around, use my buddy's house, my house, street. We were on the street, and that's the thing about Vegas. Nobody comes in LA. You put your camera down, here comes the cops. Here comes some guy going, hey, you can't shoot here. Everybody, you got to pay. You got to have permits. You got to have this. In Vegas, nobody cares. You just put your proper camera up and shoot, you know?
That's crazy. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool, and that's why you get out of LA when you're trying to make an indie on a guerrilla style shoot. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean there's so much opportunity to rent cameras or have access to.
Wait, we never talked about the biggest thing about Restless. We shot it on an iPhone.
What?
Yeah.
What? So, I didn't know this.
Yes, that's what I want to. That's what I want to, emphasize because. We were out ahead of a lot of, so we shot that on the 10.
Wow.
You know, they say the 14, the camera inside the 14 is supposed to be better than a red camera in those.
What? Like
that. Yeah, that camera is supposed to be so good. So what happened was when we were putting together, we shot a feature film, Burn, and we put every
set. Which we also featured. We featured on Wake Up Hollywood.
Yeah, you did. You talked to Carla, my producing partners, Carlos and Oriel Jimenez. But so when we put all our money in it, it was like self-financed and we were broke, you know what I mean? So, and we put a lot of money into that. It was a feature film. It's out on Amazon, all that, Google Play, you know, iTunes. But anyways, so when we were talking about Restless, I was like, my partner was like, we started talking about budget. And then he was like, hey, listen, what if we shot on an iPhone? And at first I was like, yeah, okay, because I heard Soderbergh was doing it.
So wait, then, what did he do on the iPhone?
Did you see the movie Unsane?
No.
Oh, you check it out. It's a good movie. All
right.
But he shot it all on an iPhone.
Wow.
And then I went and watched it, and I kind of was like disappointed. It had that fisheye look to it. It had the flatness to an iPhone. And I was like, I don't know, man. This movie's a thriller. It's got to be highly stylized. Then I kind of like was sour on the idea of shooting on the iPhone. And then what happened was my partner was like, let's get some lenses and you light it. And what happened was you get lenses that attach to your right here. You know, it's a screws in. And then we did tests. We brought the lead actress in, did some, and I was like, yeah, it looks good.
That's impressive.
Then we went and shot it, the whole movie on the iPhone. And I got to tell you, that day when remember you came to the screening, I was worried. Because I didn't know, you know, sometimes when you take little digital
and then you blow
them up, it just looks like crap, you know? Right. And I was really sweating it. I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, but it's got like a pretty high definition, right?
Yeah, it's got crisp. It's 4K. That's a 4K camera.
Right.
And it just looked great. I was blown away how good it looked. And I was like, all right, we're good.
It was a packed theater, dude. It was a
packed theater. Yeah. Yeah,
let's play a little trailer of it. Let's play a little trailer of it.
Yeah, go for it.
Here's a little trailer of Restless.
Why are you in my apartment?
There were some men waiting for me in my apartment when I came home tonight.
They beat you up? Why?
I owe someone some money. They came to collect.
I want you to leave now.
All I need is 10 more minutes, and I promise you, I'll leave.
You've got 10 minutes, and then I want you out.
Shoot me?
You bet.
Your real name's Johnny?
Two 11 claim five.
Yeah, five.
Yeah, man. Tell me what that audition process was like. How did you find
that? Actually, all these actors I worked with prior or were out of my acting class.
That's awesome.
So Reagan Miller, the lead actress, we've done a few projects now together, like four of them. And then a lot of those, like the cop, that's my acting teacher.
Wow, really? That's awesome.
Yeah. So just really, and everybody's gung-ho about it. Everybody was excited about the script. And that's what it is. It's like you're grinding on these. When you're doing an indie and an indie budget, you know, you don't have a lot of time. You know? I remember, so the scene in the living room when they're holding her hostage. Right. That's a lot of coverage, and that's a lot. And we were like trying to grind on it and finish it. But you're talking about, like, I don't know, it's like 10 pages of scene.
Right.
And I just remember looking around the room and everybody was losing energy. Tempers were short. It was late at night. And I was like, you know what? Let's cut it and just, that's it. No more shooting. We'll just regroup, bring it back another weekend. And that's what we did.
Wow. And so, like, how did you know?
A lot of times you push.
Right.
You sit there and go, oh, come on. We got to get it. No, no, no stopping. Keep going. Right. I saw the room. I read the room. My Carlos, my DP, that's my producing partner. His temper was short. He was tired. Right. He was, you know, losing energy. The actors, I saw them when we'd say cut, they would go collapse somewhere. And, you know, just you're grinding on these little, you know. And I just read it and I was like, no, I'm not going to push this. Because here's what happens when you do push and then you force stuff. When you get into editing, you go, oh, why did I do that? Right. Oh, this scene doesn't have the energy or the what I want it to have. And then you just kick yourself, but you have to make do with what you got. But we stopped, took it back. Everybody's well rested the next weekend. Right. You take pictures of where everybody was, how the lighting was, and then you just do it again and finish the scene. And everybody,
no one really understands how much organization is in a shoot, but it's exactly that. It's like you have to remember everybody's costumes have to be exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody's like the positions and spacing have to be exactly the same.
Continuity, yeah.
You know, and nobody really catches that when they're seeing it, but the great filmmakers they're like laser focused on that.
Because and normally you have somebody, it's called the script supervisor, and they're there to watch, and they say, hey, you didn't say the line correctly.
Right.
And I'm talking, they'll correct the actor if they say "and" instead of "then" or whatever. It's that minute, you know?
That's crazy. And how many days of shooting did you do total?
On the short, which is crazy, 6 days.
Wow, 6 days. That's a long time. What, like full days, like 10-hour days?
Yeah, no, 12 we did. Yeah. Wow. And the crazy thing is, for some reason, I thought I shot a movie as an actor at this post-production house, but they had a big green screen in there. And I thought they had a car in there. And I needed a warehouse with the car and the bodies inside the car. And I reached out to these guys and I was like, hey, can I shoot in there and bring a car? And they were like, what? And then on the day of shooting, the filmmaker who directed me in that short was like, I can't believe you got a car in here. And I go, oh, I thought you guys had a car in here. Cause we parked it inside their like garage with the green screen back there, but it works. You know,
there's something I've done a couple of music videos and it's like, when you actually are in the shoot, you realize that's like the magic of filmmaking. It's like things just happen to just occur and work out in the right way
or not work out.
Yes. Yeah. What will you hope? At least
how many times, but like I go into a shoot and you sit there and go, okay, you're just waiting for the shoe to drop, something to go wrong. Right. You know what I mean? Right. It's like,
I have to send you this music video. Like we did this music video and like, nobody talked, like I didn't tell anybody about what I was wearing or anything. We did a 100-person shoot with all these dancers and all this stuff. And the color red, I had a red suit. We had a little girl holding a balloon. The balloon was red. My, who else came? My keyboardist came with a red keyboard. I ended up playing a red guitar. I was going to use an acoustic guitar. Like all these things happened that were red. The silk aerialist came. She's like, I only brought my red silk. I'm like, oh my God. It was so weird.
Yeah.
You see like the synchronicity.
Oh, it matched up. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So tell me like, what were the things that you kind of found were like synchronistic about the shoot or moments where you're like, oh my God, this is coming together. Cause that is.
We didn't have any problems because the movie's contained thriller. It's right. shot in basically one, two, couple locations. We used that warehouse. I think it was, I'm trying to think of my locations. The house, it's the garage, the warehouse, and we shot the police interrogation there too. So it was like three locations. So that's where you, and we had control. We shot, this was my condo that we shot the girl's condo where she gets home invasion, you know? So, and we had control over that.
And did you kind of like want to shoot it? Like, I like how it's shot kind of dark. I
yeah. mean, kind of and that's a lot of that is due to my, you know, Carlos, my director of photography. He lit the S out of that. It yeah. looked so awesome. Good. That, and it, that's the thing is like, you know? It's an iPhone.
Yes.
We went to that. We went to a film festival. I think the one you came to, he won best cinematography. Other people are shooting on Reds and Alexas and stuff. And we shot it on an iPhone and he won best cinematography.
That's wild, dude. Yeah. Let's play a clip from Restless. Here's clip number one.
Is there a problem?
Are you sure we can leave her alone with these three?
Hey, relax. She's in good hands.
Marty, it's fine. Let's go. We don't have a lot of time.
Hey, don't talk to her. Just sit tight until we get back.
Like I said, she's in good hands. That thing you said earlier.
Johnny's not gonna like you messing with his girl, man.
Hey, dummy.
What the fuck?
Names.
Martin's real name is Johnny?
Don't answer her.
Just leave her be, man.
Fuck off. And that thing you said earlier. Is that what you want?
Don't go there.
Man, shut the fuck up.
Crossing the line, man.
Try stopping me.
Jesus Christ.
You mentioned rape. These guys are a bunch of pussies, but I'm not opposed to showing you a good time. Hey, hey, it's okay. It's okay. I think you'll like me. You know, if we just get to know each other a little better.
Your breath stinks.
Shut up! Nothing her breath mate can't cure.
Get away from me.
Let's see what happens when we go into the bedroom.
Let her go if you don't want to die.
What? You gonna shoot me?
You bet. You'll be dead before you can reach in.
Yeah, dude, a hard moment right there, man.
Yeah.
So tell me, like, how you kind of built this scene and how you kind of wanted to kind of deliver, like, something intense and kind of dramatic.
Yeah, it's thrillers, you know, that's the thing. I love thrillers. That's my genre, you know, my favorite movies. And then you play those anti-heroes. You know, in the movie, I get to play one, and that's just a fun character to play. You know, right. He's like a bad guy, but you might still like him.
Somewhat redeemable.
Yeah,
I feel like those characters have the most conflict,
and yeah.
that makes them the most interesting. You know what I mean? It's like when you have that double-edged sword a little bit with
like
crossroads of who they are. You don't really know who they are. You know?
Did you ever see 310 to Yuma with Russell?
Oh, yeah.
So that when I was building my character, I was thinking, oh, like that Russell Crowe character in 310 to Yuma. He's that likable bad guy.
You know? What is your favorite thriller, if that's your favorite genre?
Thriller? I mean, you know, I always like these crime films, but I watch all those things. I like I love like a Fatal Attraction or something like that, you know. But like, you know, of course, Quentin Tarantino's big influence, a lot of crime films like Michael Mann films.
I was going to say Heat's one of my favorites. Heat,
Collateral. I watch Collateral. Like, if that's on, I'll just watch. It's like, always. And that's a movie shot digitally that looks awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's like a genre that is not in the same limelight that it used to be, but it should be, because it's always compelling. It's always compelling. And a lot of it's like the ensemble cast, like it's all about who's in the cast, you know? So I like that you're kind of bringing that back, because, man, I love those movies. All those movies, they like pull you in. I see like movies today, it's watered down with dialogue sometimes. Yeah. And it's like, you know, like.
But that's the weird thing is like TV's harder R than a show.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, like, I mean, not. You know, like network TV, but HBO has harder, R's than a movie. Everything has to be PG-13 so you can get everybody to come see it. And that's why these movies just don't, if it's a thriller, it's just not that thrilling because it's a soft PG-13.
Right. So tell me about like your vision for the project before it even started.
Yeah, so I wrote that script a long time ago. I think original title was, so I'm always writing stuff for me to act in. That's where it first and foremost starts with most of the time. And then so I wrote that, I think I wrote that first, then I wrote my feature film Burn. And I was going to shoot this 8 years ago, maybe, the short. But what happened was, like, I met my producing partners, and they were like, oh, we're opening a production company. And I was like, oh, I have a script. And I sent them Burn. And then we all got together and was like, how do we get this made? And we just did it ourselves. And so that kind of took the front. Need Burner. And once we went and got once we were done with Burn and got distribution, my partners came to me and were like, hey, what do you want to do next? And I was like, oh, what about this? And then I just rewrote the script. I had it a long time ago. And it all starts with, you know, like me, okay, what character do I want to play in this thing? And then I build it around that. And then I like having a female lead, you know.
Well, she brought a lot to the table too. Yeah. Like, you see this conflict of her being kind of like innocent, but then you guys have the storied past, and then kind of like peeling all the dynamics and layers, which is kind of what I loved about the whole film. It's, you know, I could see this being a full length.
Well, I have a feature script. So what happened was, like, sometimes I'll write shorts and they're just shorts.
Right.
But then when we finished this, I was like, dude, this thing's close to 25 minutes. Or it's over 25 minutes. I was like, there's a lot more to the story I can make. And I wrote a big action. You know, I show the bank robbery. I show the aftermath of that. You know what I mean? So it's I have a script that's a
feature. Is the goal now to make the full length feature with
Right now, our next thing we're doing, I wrote something else. It's like a buddy crime thriller. Think in the vein of, it's been compared to like a Collateral, but it's about two friends. One, they're old school friends. They were criminals. One's cleaned up his life. One is getting out of prison that day. And the movie starts off with, a robbery inside a bar, and those three robbers kill everybody in the bar. Then we cut to our heroes, and the one guy's picking the other guy up from prison, and the guy getting out of prison is like, hey, I have to stop and make a stop at a U-Haul, my old U-Haul. So he goes and he has this bag of money. It's $300,000 he owes to a mob boss. And then they go to a bar to celebrate him getting out of prison. And then those three robbers show up.
I like it. And you
we're going to shoot a proof of concept over the summer. I think we're going to start casting because it's big. It's, you know, when you shoot bar scenes, like, I didn't realize, you know, you write these things, they're fast paced action scenes. Right. The movie opens like that. And then there's the middle scene where those robbers come in. So we're going to shoot that sequence. We're going to shoot the picking up at the U-Haul just to show people, like, hey, this is what the movie can be. and the humor of it and the fast pace act.
Well, I love that you're always hustling from
yeah.
one to the next. It's like that's like that old scrapper mentality. That's how I am too.
Yeah.
It's like,
I mean, nobody's throwing, you know, that's the thing is nobody's like, hey, we want you here, we want you there. I'm still auditioning. This week I'm packed with auditions. There's a lot of stuff awesome. I liked. I got some good, you know, you get to play this sleazy bad guy.
I'm in. I'm
good. Yeah. Yeah, I like that. But so I still audition, you know, because you never know what can come of that. And then
yeah, but keep making films, keep making yeah. shorts. That you have a voice. I want to play another clip from Restless. Here's clip number two from Restless.
I didn't want to leave you alone with them. I won't do it again.
Your real name's Johnny?
They're pretty fucking stupid, aren't they?
Johnny what?
Johnny's enough. That better? That's your one. You don't get to do it again without getting a smack back.
How can you do this? I mean, you let them beat you up. What, just to fool me? You know, there is something sick about that, about you.
My prison psychologist would agree with you.
You can stop this.
Look, this is what I do. And you're just one part of the plan. I'm gonna need you to start getting ready. We need to go soon. Look, did you hear me? Whoever you thought I was, that's not me. Now let's go.
Let go of me.
It's time. Hey. You do everything we ask. Nobody will get hurt. I'm gonna guarantee nothing happens to you, okay?
Yeah. You know what's so funny about that? It's like, I know you're like, okay, you're a bank teller. Reagan, do you have a pantsuit that you can wear?
Yeah. No, I bought that for her.
That's awesome. Because that
I took her to Macy's. I go, let's go.
That is the perfect outfit for a bank. Like,
yeah.
Someone who's in a bank, you know, that's like their vibe, dude.
Yeah. So
you did that well. It's like everything was character driven. And
we did. We did win. And, you know, I had that little badge made, too. I was really proud of that. We won production design, too.
That's awesome, dude. Yeah. That's awesome.
And I did all that myself. Like, I made the arrest sheet. I did all this stuff just here on my computer and ordering little name tags and really building the world of that.
If you don't mind me asking, what was the total budget for the short?
Like close to 12 grand.
That's amazing for what you guys made and how it looks. And that's what I love when I hear things that like people stretch the budget and people don't understand how fast money goes in shoots like this.
Oh, yeah.
You made a really legit short and you did it on a very limited budget. And it's amazing. I mean, I watched it twice. I watched it the first time in the theater and then you posted it. And I was like, oh man, I liked this the first time. I'm going
to
watch it.
Yeah. I traveled around with it. I went to Vegas and we won the grand prize for best narrative short out there at the Golden State Film Festival or Silver State Film Festival. I'm sorry. But it really, yeah, I was really proud of it.
You know what? You need to send it to a festival in Portugal called Fest.
And okay. Man,
you got to go because it is a little gem. I got an animated short into that festival, and I actually went right before the pandemic. I think I went to 2019.
Yeah.
And, man, it is amazing because all the people on panels are, like, Oscar winners, like, big writers, directors. I mean, I met the director from Everest. I met the sound designers for Bohemian Rhapsody. I learned to produce from Woody Allen's producer. I mean, yeah. it was wild. And it's like nobody in the U.S. really knows about it, but in Europe, it is like this known film festival, and it's small. You're in this small little beach town. Yeah. So I'll tell you about it when we're off the air.
Yeah, for sure. You know, that's the thing about the film festivals. You never know who you're going to meet.
You don't know.
So Restless played at a film festival. I ran into a guy. We had a mutual production we worked on. And then we collaborated on a short. He hired me to be the lead actor in his short. Uh-huh. It's really cool. Old school private detective story. You know, like Humphrey Bogart-ish with the voiceover. Yeah. Perfect role for me. I really dug my teeth in it. They're in post-production now on it. I just went and did ADR on it and did the voiceover narration at a studio. But really cool. But really, that's what I think about festivals. When you submit your movie and get in, it's about the relationships of meeting filmmakers. Like, I tried to go to other movies. I know a lot of people just show up and watch their own and bounce.
Yeah.
You know, I went to one where the filmmaker came in, their movie played first, and then they walked out. Well, all the other movies are still going to play.
Wow. That's
rude.
Yeah, it's kind of like no tact, but it's also like you have to realize that's a person that's self-serving and has no love for
you. It's like I just know, even back way back when I got my movie into the first festival, there was a really bad movie playing, but I stayed. It's called respect to that filmmaker, you know?
Yeah.
And then it's just, you never know. Like, that's what I love about film festivals is the relationships you can build.
Yeah. And also it's like you're with your tribe. You're with people that mostly
like-minded. Mostly, yeah.
Love film and love movies. Have you ever been to Sundance? You have to be.
I've been to Sundance, but not with a prod.
You need to send this and all your films because, man, they are Sundance heavy with just like the vibe of them. They're well done. They're well made. So I know it's political to get into that festival.
It's just tough because, I mean, you're talking about 60,000 films.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, the odds of getting in are tough as it is. And then a lot of times, a lot of the movies that are getting in have stars attached.
Or it's like a movie house is attached, you know?
Yeah.
But they still do make a good point because I've watched a lot of them where it's you know, it's not a big star. It's not a big film house.
I mean, that's what Sundance originally was for, was for the younger. But I mean, it's also a business too. Right. They got to sell it.
They saw that as becoming an avenue, so they made it commercial.
But I mean, that's just the nature of that. Like, you have, even if the smallest little festival became big, they would be doing
this. Right. But I mean, you know what? It's a testament. I always look for artists. Like, one of the things I love about this show, it's like, it is. Brought me to meet so many artists that are out there hustling and creating content, making art, and just doing the grind for the love of film. And it's like, honestly, even when you have a big budget, it's going to make you, it's going to test your love because you're making films the way you want to make them.
Yeah.
Like when you start having movie houses, you're going to have some jackasses saying, just telling you, you know, you really should have this for the scene. And you're like, fuck are you? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, when you're writing and directing your own project and I'm the producer on it, that's a different story. I was listening to Todd Field, the director of Tar, and he said on some movie he made, I forgot, you know, he's made, what, 3 movies and they all been nominated for an Oscar, but he was saying on one of his sets, he's the writer-director. And the script supervisor came to him and said, no, you can't change this. In the script, it says this. And he said, Todd wrote this, not God.
That's awesome.
So I can do what I want.
Well played. Well played. Yeah. Let's play one more scene from Restless. Here's clip number 3.
Ashley, whoa, it's okay.
Martin?
Yeah, it's me.
What the hell are you doing here?
I'm in a little bit of trouble.
Why are you in my apartment?
I'm sorry. It's just I had nowhere else to go.
What happened to your face?
I don't mean to scare you.
Don't come any closer.
Ashley.
Martin and I will call the cops if you don't tell me why you're in my apartment.
Okay. There were some men waiting for me in my apartment when I came home tonight.
They beat you up? Why?
I owe someone some money. They came to collect. It's a gambling thing.
How'd you get in my apartment?
The door was unlocked and I needed to hide.
The door was unlocked? I lock it before I go to sleep every night.
What can I tell you? It was open. I don't know anyone else in the building. This was the only place I could think of to come.
Are you kidding me in too?
Ashley, no one saw me come in here. I would never put you in danger.
I want you to leave now.
They're still looking for me. If they found me, who knows what they'll do next?
Do you have the money to pay them?
If I did, they wouldn't turn my face into ground burger.
Who are you? It's like you're a different person.
I'm sorry. All I need is 10 more minutes, and I promise you, I'll leave.
You've got 10 minutes, and then I want you out.
Thank you.
What?
There's somebody out there.
Yeah, man. I was in it. I was just like,
yeah.
Dude, first of all, I got two questions. First of all, the music.
Yeah. Composer. Awesome.
Because he just built it with soundscaping in the right ways, building suspense. So tell me, like, what did you tell him as the director?
Oh, I temped it first. So what you do is you put temporary music in. You know, I don't say, like, hey, make it exactly like this. Right. This is the feel.
Right.
And then he goes off and does what he does. He'll send us samples. And it's just back and forth emailing, like, lose this or add that or stretch that out longer. And that's how we work. I got to give a big shout out to him because his composing is phenomenal. He did my feature film Burn too. And we found him on, we put up an ad on Craigslist.
Wow.
And we had people want to do the score for Burn. And then we just had them, here's two scenes, score it. Some guys were like, no, that's too much work. I was like, okay, then you don't get the job.
Right, right.
Show me the scene, show me your music, and then if you get the job, you know, he did, and he was awesome.
Yeah, he's a keeper for sure.
Yeah, Pietro Milanese, he's awesome.
And I always wondered about this, so like, when you're miking like a scene like that, is it the boom that's getting all of the?
There's a boom. So we had a really good sound, mixer on set.
Right.
Boom is coming. So there's a partition there and coming over towards me. And then we're mic'd, lavs.
Okay, so is that usually standard? That's how most.
Yeah, I mean, most movies are going to do.
Because that. I always wonder that. I'm like, man.
You have two tracks. You'll have a lav, her lav, my lav, and then the boom.
Okay, because you know what's so funny is when I was starting out in the band, I had a song that was in like an indie film and it was like a friend of a friend. And I was like, yeah, sure. And we went and man, the audio was so bad. It was so bad that it was like, man, I never realized how important audio is.
Wait, it's the most important thing. They say you can have a bad looking lighting, scene with good sound and it still works. You have a well lit scene, awesome looking with bad sound, your movie's bad.
Wow, it's crazy. So I didn't really, that's like the underestimated element.
Yeah. And those guys are the guys that get treated the worst on set. The sound guys. And they're the most important guy, I gotta tell you.
So, and do you have like a kind of like a set crew of people, an ensemble that you always?
Yeah. Like? So, with Carlos and Oriel, those are my producing partners. We've done now 4 or 5 projects together. Wow. And then it's a lot of the same crew, sound guys. We're building a team,
Yeah, and I mean, that's the way to do it. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, and then they like working on our projects, and it's, you know, you trust those people. You know what I mean? And it's just a good atmosphere.
So tell me, what is like what is your creative process? Do you start with a character? Do you start with a
screenwriting wise?
Yeah, screenwriting wise.
Let me think, because I wrote so the new script, the one we're going to shoot the proof of concept, it's called All Kinds of Trouble. That started because in Burn, somebody said two actors had really good chemistry. And I was just like, oh, all right, let me build a movie.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then I wrote, you know, it's kind of like if you think of a Midnight Run or Collateral, it's that relationship between Ed Norton and Matt Damon in Rounders, you know, one guy getting out of prison, the one guy straightening out of his life. You got a dirty cop, you know, kind of like Denzel Washington in Training Day, that kind of thing. So
yeah, those,
you know,
books like, never get old. They just never get old.
Yeah, and I knew these elements that I wanted to put in the script, and I got to tell you, I don't like to outline a lot. I just like to jump in it right. I got a screenwriting program, and I'll just, and then I can fly. I can write. You know, you sit there, start writing. Burn, I wrote in 4 days. The original draft. Wow. Yeah. That's and cool. I mean, I was cranking
out. And like rewrites.
It's a funny story with that. We did do a rewrite later because I had the lead actress in Burn. I had her come do a table read, and then I read with a bunch of other actors. And that's what I suggest. If you're a screenwriter out there, have a table read, have people read your script out loud. You will hear what works, what doesn't, and then you will go, oh, if I tweak this, tweak that, you know? The original draft of Burn, I had this, I don't know if you've seen Burn yet, but super dark ending. And, you know, I'm wondering if maybe I wanted to keep it open for more movies because I wrote a sequel to Burn. But I remember I had this really dark ending. And when we finished that table read, again, I read the room. Everybody was like, and I was like, all right, I'm gonna change the end.
Feel the energy from the ensemble. Everybody's
Oh,
that's heavy. Yeah. So, and then you, like, what's your process for rewriting? Do you kind of like take it, you do the table read, and you kind of do a couple different drafts?
You know, what I like is, what's his name, Paul Thomas Anderson. Says screenwriting's like ironing. You iron a little and then go back. Iron a little and go back. And that's what you do. What I'll do is, say I'm writing the script, say I wrote 10 pages, the next day or whatever, the next time I write, I'll go over those 10 pages and clean stuff up.
And do you find like the action or the dialogue, it, like, what's more important to you to make sure that it's is like succinct, clean?
Yeah. You know, I have a tendency to write a lot of dialogue, and a lot of people don't like, you know, now audiences.
Show, don't tell, right?
Well, audiences are different today.
Right.
They don't have the attention spans or the patience. It has to be action. You know, that's the one thing I think is lacking in films today is I always notice you watch a movie and it's thrown, you just forget about it. Right. Remember those old movies?
You don't forget about them.
Yeah, they live with us 40 years later. Die Hard's what, almost 40 years old, and it's all those little moments that you remember. Pulp Fiction, all the little dialogue, all the little character thing. You know what I was thinking is today, if Die Hard was made, they would start with those two guys walking in the lobby and killing the guard. Right. That's where the movie would start. You wouldn't see Bruce on the airplane. You wouldn't see him in the limo with Argyle. Yeah. All that stuff is character and building and making it fun.
They want it quick. They want it to grab your attention, but it's up there.
And compromising, you know, the story. One of my scripts landed in this contest in the top 20, and I got to meet with a producer, and he was telling me to cut all the character stuff. And I was like, no. But then that's when I immediately realized, oh, that's why we're seeing these movies with nothing to them.
And you know what? I feel like everybody is following trends and not being trailblazers in like making good movies. Whereas, you know, what I love about the old movies that you love, it's like, it's all story-based. It's all character-driven. It's story-based. It could be anybody playing those characters if they're the right character.
Yeah.
And it's like,
and that's the thing, a thing about it too, is like all these things about getting rid of the character aspects of it. Just make the movie. You don't care about right. these characters, what they're going through. But if you have that moment, if you hear that story about Bruce talking about his wife, oh, okay, this guy's going to get his wife. He's got a problem here, you know? And those are the things they want to throw out now.
I would love to see Restless turn into a full...
Yeah, I have a feature script. I think it probably needs a... The one aspect of it is because I'm really into, like, opening this story with them inside the apartment, her waking up. You know, it's building the relationship between... the hero and her and how that, you know, evolves right. throughout the script. I just think it needs one more rewrite, but I think the script is pretty good, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's awesome. I love the short and, you know, yeah. I think the world of you as a filmmaker and a writer Thanks. And an actor, man, you're triple threat, bro.
Yeah. Hey, I'm just keep cranking them out and I keep grinding, you know, I'm not like egotistical. I'm just trying to do work.
Well, and it's also, it's like you realize, you know, like I think I've released something like 8 or 9 records and you don't realize, like, you're just focusing on that present project.
Yeah, that thing. Yeah.
And then you realize as time goes by, you're actually leaving the world with something
yeah.
really, like, consistently great. You know what I mean?
And yeah, that's the thing. You make these things for people to see and you want people to respond to them and not negatively or not get bored and throw it out. It's like we're trying to engage an audience with this stuff.
Absolutely. And I wanted to ask you off the record, even though we're on the record, what is a movie in this day and time that you really feel is like a phenomenal movie? Maybe it's on, like, above the radar, or maybe it's under the radar. What is a movie that you're like, okay, I believe in filmmakers. This is a movie I think people need to see.
Yeah, I feel like since the pandemic, I mean, really, I think 2019 was the last great movie year. Because even now I'm watching stuff. I'll watch a movie and I'll be like, it was good, but was it great? You know, even the best stuff.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, the really last great movies, I think, were like Parasite and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And that's 2019, right before the pandemic.
But still, both those movies don't come close to The Departed for me. I love The Departed. That movie was like cinematic magic on every level. Scorsese. Yes. Finally wins.
Crushed it. Yeah.
And, like, I love that movie.
And so I love, that's a remake too.
Yeah. Of a Korean movie.
Right? No, it's, what is it? It's called, oh my God. Oh, if I can't think of the name. there's three of them in the series.
Yeah. And
the first one was awesome.
Right. Right. I just love all those. I love that movie. I think it's one of
Oh, my best. God. This is going to drive me crazy.
I know. You'll have to text me for me. I know the movie you're talking about because I'm blanking
on it. Yeah, but Scorsese, and I like what they did with it. They took it and elaborated it, you know, and you got Jack in there, Leo, Matt.
So there's nothing. Like TV, do you think TV is taking over film, or do you kind of?
Yeah, I think that's where it's at. The stuff I respond to. And the writing, like right now we're watching The Last of Us.
Okay, I heard
that. You do so much more with a show now. You can take your time. What about Better Call Saul?
Yes.
White Lotus. I think Mike.
I just met Bob Odenkirk, lives down the street from me, and I just met him.
Oh, really?
I was like, man, you're so great and everything. He was like, such a nice thing to say. I'm like, dude. I'm like,
what's great about him is he didn't hit it big until, you know, I mean, he was around, but he's having his highlight now. What is he, 60-something years old, you know?
And he deserves it.
He's awesome.
Your time is coming, bro. Your time is coming.
Hey, yeah, and that's the thing is, like, I think you can do stuff in TV, and that's what, you know, it's like you have the time to build a character and make it impactful.
where can people find you and find your films if they want to find you online?
Yeah, so go on IMDb, check me out, Patrick Lazzara, L-A-Z-Z, you see my name right here. But check that out, and you'll see a list of my movies, the stuff I wrote, the stuff I directed. I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, P. Lazzara.
And Rest is on YouTube right now, right?
I put it up there because, you know, I felt like I did the festival round, we won some awards. But I want people to see it, and I want it out there. You know, it's almost got 2,000 views. It's been up for like 8 days. So I'm trying to get it up there, and, you know, hopefully people see it, respond to it, comment, you know. And then go on IMDb and give us a rating.
I'll do that right after.
Thank you, bro.
But you know what? You have to just keep making movies, man. You make great films. And I like what you do. And you have an open invitation to keep coming back to Wake Up Hollywood and keep showcasing your films. And I hope to see that happen more and more. So check out Patrick Lazzara. Check out Restless. Check out Burn. Check out all his upcoming films. Thank you guys so much. You guys all have a happy Valentine's Day. We're pre-recording this so that we can go out with our Valentine's for dinner. Not right.
I'm going off to work.
All right. You have a great rest of your day. Thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. On behalf of Sam, Patrick, and myself, we'll see you guys here next week. Peace and love.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.